Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
The trade-up used to be rare. Past 3 years, not nearly as much. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday. And what is the trade-up, Chuck? What are you talking about? Trade-up is the stage that you were on while playing college football and the ability to make the trade-up. I'm going to use some evaluative terms. I'm going to make some assessments of program strength. Understand, this is not me editorializing as much as possible. This is me as much as possible just delivering the news. As in, LSU is a way better program than Missouri. For instance, if you played at Missouri last year and then you got a scholarship offer from LSU and you took it. Folks, let me ask you, if Eli Drinkwitz won 30 games the next three seasons at Missouri, and LSU looked at Brian Kelly and went, ha, guy from Boston, and made a coaching change. And they called Eli Drinkwitz. Wouldn't Eli Drinkwitz take the LSU job immediately? Folks, Gary Pinkel would have left Missouri for LSU. It's not even that they don't even do this. They don't attempt to do the same things. And, folks, I'm saying not really. Yes, Eli and everybody in Como was trying to win on Saturday and then throughout the 12 Saturdays and then get to Atlanta and win that Saturday as well and blah, blah, blah. And if they'd have beaten Auburn in 2013, they might have played for the national championship. Maybe not, but maybe. God bless the Tigers. They ain't as good as the ones in Baton Rouge. And that's just how it is. So you could trade up, for instance, if you had played at Missouri, for instance, and now you can play at LSU, for instance. It used to be much more rare. I'm friends with a guy named Dave Archer. And David Archer, if you look up on his, I don't know if he has a Wikipedia page. He should. Played in the NFL for 15 years. You play in the NFL for that long, you deserve a little something. Or actually, pro football, let me say that way. Because Dave Archer played in the NFL, he played in the Canadian League, he played in the World League of American Football. So he had a long pro career. I think it was 13 or 14 years. Dave Archer, coming out of high school, was a really good quarterback. This was 1980. But he was coming out of high school in Soda Springs, Idaho. And he looked around, he's like, nobody at the big schools has even seen me in person. So a guy who was good enough eventually to play pro ball for, like, I don't know, 14 seasons. He left Soda Springs, Idaho, and went to Snow College in Utah. We always look at, oh, he went to a junior college, he went somewhere else, or he's transferring, or what was the issue? There was no issue. The issue was, I'm from Idaho and nobody knows me. Now I'm at Snow College. Now I'm at Iowa State, and I can get to the NFL. If we go back, and I'm going to get this wrong, but if we go back about, I don't know, 15 years, there was a season when Tommy Tuberville, and this goes back to his Jimmy Johnson days when he was coaching linebackers down at Miami. I'll give Jimmy Johnson credit. He put this in the pros as well. He had a linebacker with Dallas named Robert Jones out of East Carolina. Dan, do you remember him?
I think he was
number 52, maybe. And he was not big enough to play in the league, but he was big enough for Jimmy Johnson. And he might have led Dallas in tackles 3 or 4 years. He's just this fly-around, hitchy guy. He's too small, but not for Jimmy. Tuberville was coaching linebackers down there for Jimmy, and then when he bounced over to A&M and Ole Miss, he just kept that philosophy. We're going to be smaller because those players are easier to get, but they can be just as good as the behemoths that, you know, you got to out, you know, recruit Alabama and Oklahoma and Texas for. Get the smaller kid. There was a year at Auburn where Tuberville's starting linebackers, and I'm going to try to remember, if you're an Auburn fan, feel free to tweet me. I'm going to say this would have been, I don't know when, 2006 maybe? But one year, he had linebackers where across the board, I think it was 210, 215, 215. Folks, that's in the Southeastern Conference. Had a kid named Trey Blackman. I think he moved Will Herring up from safety. And then there was a kid named Karibi Didi. Karibi Didi came out of high school in Virginia, and he went to Hargrave. Now, why do you go to Hargrave Military Academy at a high school to play football? Well, because you've got an issue. Either you ain't smart, you don't have the book learning, you ain't got the grades, or you're not good enough or big enough, or you have an issue with ink on your fingers. Turn to the right. You have some sort of issue if you're going to Hargrave. Karibi Didi's issue was that when he graduated high school, he was about 200 pounds. And he was a little tiny guy who had been experiencing tremendous success in high school, 39 straight wins, two state championships. But he's this little bitty guy who eventually grows up to be an SEC linebacker. But he's like, nobody's looking at me. I'm too small. So he goes to Hargrave, flies around. All kinds of schools look at him then. What are we going to do with him? Tuberville's like, come to Auburn. I'll make you a linebacker. Now, why did Karibi have to go to, again, Hargrave Military? It wasn't grades. He's a doctor now. Dr. Karibi Didi. So that's why he went to Hargrave, was to get noticed. That's why Dave Archer went to Snow Community College, to get noticed. That used to be the outlier. That I'm not good enough or I'm not getting attention right now to go to the school I really want to. So to get noticed, I'll go play at a community college in Utah or Hargrave Military Academy, and I'll try to get on people's radar. Folks, you do that at Missouri now. And specifically, I'm talking about a kid named Mekhi Wingo. If you look at LSU's potential, starting front four, I think you honestly have to talk about a starting front. How many guys do I really like? Nine. And one of those kids is Mekhi Wingo. Mekhi Wingo, a year ago, as a three-star recruit with more limited options, he signed with Missouri. Kid from St. Louis, sort of local, so all right, I'm going to Mizzou. Well, at Missouri, he makes 2021 freshman All-SEC. And suddenly a guy who was good enough to play in the Southeastern Conference. Folks, when Iowa State got a transfer from Snow Community College, they got a guy who needed to get up to speed a little bit. Karibi Didi, when Auburn got a kid out of Hargrave Military, well, it's the SEC now. You got to get up to speed. They're not getting up to speed for a guy who's already started and played in, I think, every game last year for Missouri and made first team All-SEC freshman team. So that is the trade-up in 2022 college football. Trade-up comes from the SEC to the SEC. The trade-up can come from within the division. Even from a place like LSU, because I got to say right now, Eli Ricks, he's looking around in Tuscaloosa going, yeah, okay, this will work. The trade-up used to be, all right, what was the wart? What was the flea? What was the issue you had? And it may have been I was too small. It may have been I grew up in Idaho. It may have been 50 things. Do you know what, quote, the issue is now? Yeah, that there's not one. That I'm good enough to get a scholarship at one Southeastern Conference school, which, folks, let's say you're on top of the mountain. Now, I don't know if everybody's turned and looking at you, but you are up there on top of the mountain. So, starting at Missouri, especially for a kid who's from there, it's not so bad. LSU's better, which is why Mekhi Wingo transferred. Now, when I say that LSU may have one of the best front fours because there's like nine that I like, here's another big difference between the trade-up that used to happen and the trade-up now. Mekhi Wingo, when a program used to take in a transfer, you only brought in a transfer if he was going to start. Mekhi Wingo, I can tell you right now, he hadn't done anything in Baton Rouge. I can tell you right now, Mekhi Wingo's not starting unless there's at least one injury, because Mason Smith, that guy's a monster. He's a fantastic-looking young defensive tackle. They play the same position, and Mason Smith's better. And Langston may be better. And at end, B.J. Ojulari, I asked Matt Moscona before last year, can Ojulari be the best pass rusher on the team? And I think Moscona laughed at me. Ojulari led the team in sacks, I think. And if he didn't, maybe it was Allie Gay on the other side. Or maybe it was the 900 pounds of really good nose that they have 1, 2, and 3 on the depth chart at nose. Folks, this front four, loaded. Mekhi Wingo's a really good player who was going to start at another SEC program. He's like, you know what? I'll get in the mix in Baton Rouge. I'll get in the mix in Baton Rouge. And I got to tell you, the defense, it's going to look a whole lot like an NFL approach to building and then fielding a defense. Do you know why? Here's how you build a defense in the NFL. Two guys who can get after the quarterback up front, two guys on the edge up front, two guys who can cover downfield, and then you fill in the other seven with hopefully at least B-minus players. If you've got consistent, effective pass rush and you can cover a little bit, folks, that's it. That defense is done. Go build your offense. In college, that's what it's looking like. In LSU, they've got at least two pass rushers. And they got, Jerick Bernard, another transfer at corner. He started 4 years for Oklahoma State. That's pretty good. So whatever you think of Jim Knowles, maybe you think that about Jerick Bernard. This team has had as much turnover as any elite program in college. Like Georgia Tech doesn't count. I think Georgia Tech had maybe one more transfer than even LSU. That's different. Jeff Collins trying to keep his job. Brian Kelly, I promise you, he's thinking about, and he doesn't expect it, he's thinking about how can we win the West this year? And I can promise you, if it happens on defense, it's going to be by a number 10 wash tub spilling over the sides with defensive linemen, all four spots. Rush end, big end, that's Gay. Interior, overloaded with SEC caliber and higher guy, NFL caliber guys. And then you got guys who can cover downfield, at least two of them. And I already told you one. So there is a chance that if LSU was surprising everyone and they get to November and the season doesn't fly sideways off the rails, it's likely to be because of that pass rush and the ability to do something on the back end when the ball's in the air. So we're going to take a quick break, continue with more college football conversation next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
If I saw right yesterday, FSU has added an offensive lineman. And folks, I'm not like in the DeLorean going back like 3-4 years ago or any time in the last 75 where if you, quote, added a lineman in June, it was, oh, yeah, you're having one of those big June recruiting weekend events and some big guy from South Georgia said, I'm going to Florida State. No, like they really added an offensive lineman, like somebody who's already played. I want to welcome on right now. I'm going to call him a good friend of mine and the program, and he's got the lowdown on everything Florida State, including adding an offensive lineman in June. From warchant.com, it's the managing editor. It's Ira Schoffel. Ira, brother, how are you today?
I'm great, Chuck. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Tell me about this big human that decided to go from Columbia, South Carolina to Tallahassee, Florida.
Yeah, his name is Jasdan Turnitage, and he is a guy who's started 10 games over the last two seasons at South Carolina. Originally started his college career in junior college over in Hutchinson. He's been at South Carolina the last 2 years, went into the portal, I guess within the last month or so. And Florida State, it basically became Florida State and Michigan State very early on. And Florida State got him. And like you said, it all happens quickly. It's not like the old days. He committed one day. Florida State announced his signing, and he's already on the roster. He'll be playing for Florida State this fall.
And so there was big news, I don't know, maybe a couple of months ago, during spring practice, as a matter of fact, when one of Georgia's former five stars was visiting. Obviously, offensive line is a priority for everybody. It's more of a priority in Tallahassee. Does this bring to the numbers like 9 or 10 kids, whether transfers or high school recruits? I mean, they've like a third of the kids they're bringing in are offensive linemen.
Yeah, they went after it hard and heavy for sure. They brought in six high school offensive linemen. It's a really good class. I mean, you got Julian Armella, highly acclaimed offensive tackle, several other four-star guys that they really like, and three or four of them were in spring practice, so they've already got a look at them. But then they went out and got four transfers as well. And this one, they got a guy, Bless Harris, from Lamar University, Caden Lyles, a part-time starter at Wisconsin, and a fourth. So they've got four offensive linemen coming in as transfers to go with those six high school guys. And really the hope is that they can actually start redshirting and building and developing those young guys instead of throwing them into the fire, which Florida State's been doing the last few years. They've been playing true freshmen, a redshirt freshman on the offensive line, and that's usually a recipe for what we've seen from Florida State football over the last few years.
All right, and somebody said Jameis's little brother was in town, and apparently it's kind of a big deal. I was like, I hadn't heard of him. He's like, oh, he's an eighth grader, or just finished his eighth grade year, I guess. Is that true, or am I being punked?
That's right. His name is Jonah, and from following, friends with his dad, Jameis's dad, Ant Winston, on Facebook, and he's been posting videos of Jonah playing football and baseball since he was, I don't know, it seemed like 3 years old. And so we've kind of watched this young man develop on social media, and now his highlights are out there from his eighth grade year of high school over in Alabama, where he's, throwing 40-yard touchdown passes in a middle school game. So he's going to be a freshman this year, I think, at Hoover over in Alabama, and I think you're going to be hearing a lot about Jonah Winston.
I've been talking with a lot of folks, and maybe you and I have touched on it as well, as far as, like, big-picture facilities, Florida State, whatever. And I've told people, I was like, folks, if you want to see a transformation, go look at Doak Campbell back when, you could see the girders and all that stuff. I was like, if there's a way to remake a college football stadium, boy, they found it. It's just gorgeous facility over there. But I'm talking specifically for a high school – I was going to say high school junior or senior or an eighth grader. What is that kid experiencing during his recruiting trip that maybe somebody at Florida State would want to elevate, like compared to Bama, Clemson, Oregon, whomever else? Is the recruiting trip looking the same?
Well, the thing that's really, kind of been a thorn in their side for 5-6 years now. I mean, when Jimbo Fisher, I think back in 2016 was when Jimbo Fisher first started talking about a football-only facility, and then Clemson, of course, unveiled theirs, and at the time it was – everybody was just groundbreaking what Clemson had done, and now just about everybody has one or is certainly building one. Florida State's expecting to break ground on theirs at the end of the season, but it won't be in place until the 2024 season. So they're still a couple years away from having that football-only facility, which will be, they're saying it'll be the best in the country when it's unveiled, but right now they still don't have one. That's been the biggest knock. They did unveil brand-new locker rooms. I think they spent, I can't remember the exact price tag, several million dollars on brand-new locker rooms that have been a hit so far. But really that's, and like you said, Doak is pretty from the outside. It's still a great environment. It's still a beautiful college campus. But that football facility is something they really need to get done.
Continue with Ira Schoffel, War Chant. All right. This, so I'm asking you about the facilities, and at the same time, I want to bring up some, I don't know, it was maybe a month ago or so, I saw Coach Norvell was talking about, there's tampering. And I'm like, oh, which coach is saying that? Because he's right, whoever it is. And I was like, oh, it's Mike Norvell saying it. Yep, he's right. There's tampering everywhere now. And so I ask you about facilities, and in the same breath, I'm like, yeah, and facilities aren't nearly as important as they were about 3 years ago. It's how much money can I send back home from my name, image, likeness deal? So what is the latest of either advancements, developments, the status, the level of Florida State's name, image, likeness efforts with recruiting? Because that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's another area where they're playing catch-up, quite frankly. And there are some people in the fan base who believe FSU should scrap the plans for the football facility at this point and just take all that money, the $180 or $100 million, whatever it is, and put it towards NIL. I don't think that that's going to work, because a lot of people still like seeing their names on buildings.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit more than they do just knowing that they helped recruit a kid. But Florida State is playing catch up there. I think that they underestimated early in December that how big of a part in recruiting it was going to be. I think they assumed people were going to try to abide by the letter of the law, and I think that was a false assumption, obviously. And so they're catching up. They've got a collective called Rising Spear that combined with another collective that was run by Mackenzie Milton, and they're trying to get that going. But again, I think they've gotten to the point where they've convinced a lot of their players to stay. As you said, with the tampering, they had at least two players I know of who had significant offers to go to other schools, and Florida State was, not them, because they're not allowed to do it, but Florida State's a collective, the Rising Spear, yeah, was able to kind of swing deals to keep those guys here. But that's going to be an ever-growing challenge, because Florida State, as you know, does not have quite the deep pockets of a lot of these other schools that have been playing football for 150 years, let alone 60 or 70 that Florida State has been.
Yeah, not to get too far off the beaten trail here, but Zay Flowers is a Fort Lauderdale kid at BC, and he was like, yeah, like 3 days before May 1st, the deadline, he said, mm-hmm, I had multiple six-figure offers for me to jump into the portal. I was like, he's on scholarship at BC and never jumped near the portal. And so when Norvell said that, I was like, absolutely there are people tampering. Ain't no doubt in my mind. Ira, I appreciate you as always, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Take care.
All right. Irish Oval again, war chant. Yeah, I'll tell you what. Zay Flowers grew up in Florida. 14 kids in the house. Mom died, I don't know, when he was about 4 or 5. Dad's a truck driver. 14 kids. Zay Flowers, man, he must have fallen in love. Was it Chestnut Hill? Is that right, Dan? Yeah, he must have. Ooh, into the rainbow. For a kid from Fort Lauderdale to look around and say, and by the way, going to class at BC, that ain't no prize. And he turned it down. He said he was told he could get as much as $600,000 from one school. He said, now, it wasn't the schools or the coaches. It was the intermediaries who went to people close to me. He said, but I turned them all down. I told the coach. He's like, is this allowed? And Jeff Affley's like, yeah, no, that's not allowed. You can't be contacted by, you're not in the portal. And so when I saw coach complains of tampering, I was like, who's right this time? And it was Norvell.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right. You can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly, because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today. AccentRoofingService.com.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And I have talked at various times about the Houston Cougars football program. We've been on the air now about 8 years, and so if we go back to the very beginning of this program and even beyond, Houston, when the Southwest Conference stopped being a conference because everybody basically probationed themselves into non-existence, Houston, they got passed around like a fruitcake at Christmas. And I'm talking about playing facilities. I'm talking about conferences. I'm talking about reputation, et cetera. And I said, folks, linebackers, running backs, option quarterbacks, and fans, Houston's going to be something again. I don't know when, but at some point. And then they swiped a Power 5 head coach and got a little bit of attention. But it's still Houston. Well, it's not about to still be Houston anymore. There are better days ahead and bigger stages, et cetera. And so we're going to talk a lot about what's going on out yonder in Texas. But we're going to start in Houston with Sam Kahn Jr. He is a senior writer for The Athletic. We're going to talk a lot of SEC and et cetera, but we're going to start with the University of Houston, which is making the step back up to big-time football, and that is nice. Sam, how are you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing okay. I've talked about when I was doing the Conference USA games, and I found Robertson Stadium to be quaint, and a Houston fan said, this place is an ashtray. Well, it's not anymore. In fact, they got a shiny, sparkly new crib, and they've got a new conference, and they got tons of money. And so tell me what's ahead, you, in your opinion, for U of H, because I've said for the 8 years I've been on this program, I was like, folks, Houston's a big-time program that's not in a big-time conference, and now there is at least the chance for that to happen again.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the ceiling and the potential for this program is really high. And I'm sure you remember when they joined the Southwest Conference in 76, they won the league right away. Yeah. I think they won it twice in the first 4 years they were in it. They were pretty competitive right away. And obviously, they've got a lot of catching up to do because they haven't been in a power conference 25 years. And that means they haven't had the revenues of a power conference 25 years. So there's a lot of gap to close between them and Baylor and TCU and Tech, the schools are going to join. But they've got the, what I call, institutional want to. They're willing to spend. They recruit really well. They've obviously got a really fertile recruiting base. And they, like you said, they've been willing to hire big-time coaches. You know, they hired Tom Herman, you know, where, you know, back when he was at Ohio State and he was the offensive coordinator, he took them to great success for a couple of years before he went to Texas. They went and got Dana Holgorsen out of West Virginia, which I thought was an impressive move to be able to pull a coach out of the Power 5 and bring him to a Group of 5 program. And they're willing to spend to retain coaches. You know, their defensive coordinator, Doug Belt, they raised his salary to $1 million. I don't know how many Group of 5 programs are paying their coordinator's $1 million a year, but they did that because they felt it was important enough to keep him. And then facilities are one of those things that they've done really well. They did really well with the basketball facilities. They redid the stadium, as you mentioned. They've got a really pristine indoor facility. And today, I think Dana Holgorsen announced he's donated $1 million toward a new football operations building that they're going to start construction on probably next year. So they're very aggressive in trying to get to the top. So because of that and because of where they sit in the state in terms of recruiting footprint, I think their ceiling in the future is really high.
You know, Sam, and you know Cruton, especially getting out there, Memphis, for instance. Memphis is a city that if you go back like 20 years ago, Memphis was the Wild West, man. It was where you went for elite recruits. And that's the one, like, recruiting city, the hotbed in America, where that's really changed over the past couple decades. Other than that, I think if you knew recruiting 50 years ago, you know recruiting today, including Miami, New Orleans, Atlanta, L.A., Houston. Tell me that that's not just a reputation that lingers, that still is an elite, like not even the state, but specifically Houston. And I've said linebackers, running backs, option quarterbacks, it's everybody.
Yeah, no doubt. No, it really is. It really is the state of Texas because Houston is really fertile. You know, you remember back in the day, SMU in the Pony Express days, they went and got Craig James and Eric Dickerson out of Houston, out of the Houston area. I mean, Dickerson from Sealy, just a little bit west, but that still remains the case now. Texas A&M's number one class obviously has a lot of national flavor to it, but it started with a domination in Houston. That's where one of their first-round draft picks, Kenyon Green, who just got drafted by the Texans. He was a Houston-area product. One of the reasons A&M has recruited so well is because they've dominated the Houston area. So that is very much still it holds true. Because, and it's not just football, it's across the other sports. It's a great high school baseball town. It's a great track and field
hoops.
City. There's a lot of talent that comes. Hoops has come up really, really strong in the last 15 years. So it really is a great place to find a lot of talent. Dallas, of course, is. East Texas, of course, is. So those are really, if you're recruiting Texas, those are really the three spots you got to hit: Houston, Dallas, and East Texas. And if you can get 25 good players out of that, you're going to do pretty damn well.
Continuing with Sam Kahn Jr., get him on Twitter at S-Kahn Jr. I know it's him because he got blue check, and he writes for The Athletic. I had about 10 other questions that I was going to ask you, but I'm going to go down a completely different path now. Reuben Owens, when did you start hearing that Louisville, he's a five-star running back, maybe one or two in America for everybody listening, committed to Louisville earlier this week. When did you hear that, hey, Louisville, this is real and he's going there, at least he's going to commit?
I think it was Sunday night after the visit was over. Steve Wilfong at 247 wrote about that, and I think he had made a prediction that he was going to end up there. And I'll be honest, even when it happened on Monday, I was surprised. It just seemed out of left field. And then Reuben has been very open in his commitment. He said it a lot over the last year plus. He was committed to Texas a little bit more than a year ago, decommitted, and he keeps saying that everything was 100% open. He wasn't leaning any one way. And a lot of people say, well, that's just him, you know, trying to throw us off the scent. And no, that's actually true, because if you're committed to Louisville, I would have never guessed you were leaning that way if you're coming out of El Campo, Texas. So you know, props to Scott Satterfield and Louisville staff. They had a really impressive visit weekend. I saw, you know, some Instagram stories with some fancy supercars and some private jets and all this other stuff going on. They really blew it out for their visit weekend. So I'll be interested to see if it sticks, because Owens has been very active in his process. Even when he was committed to Texas, he visited. He's been all across the country, you know, throughout his process. Obviously, a lot of connections to a lot of the schools in-state. A&M, TCU, Texas were considered among the hot contenders for him. So I'll be curious to see. And a lot of the coaches I've talked to around the state who are also surprised by this have said the same thing. They're waiting to see, is this going to stick for the next 6 months? So, like I said, props to Louisville for being able to do it. If they're able to hang on to him, that's a huge win, because he's an instant impact player.
All right, let's talk top 20 in the state of Texas, which is top 20 like almost no other place in America. It's like Florida, Georgia, California. The top 20 in Texas right now, what in the world is Marcus Freeman doing? Because he's got four, maybe five kids in Texas, top 20 in the state, who are committed or leaning or thinking, et cetera.
Yeah, no, it's he's done a really good job. And Notre Dame is one of those that's a national program that has always kept a foot in Texas. They've always done a good job of being able to recruit the area. And I think Freeman, there's just a lot of energy around that program. I think from the time that he got promoted and he was tabbed as a successor, you could tell at that time that there was just a lot of positive energy and a lot of buzz around him and around that program when that decision was made. So, like I said, just going back even to the Kelly era and even before that, Notre Dame has long been, at least, and I've been covering this 17 years in the state of Texas from high schools all the way up. From the time that I've been doing it, Notre Dame has kept a presence here. And because they are in a program that recruits nationally, they're able to do it. And I know I've talked to high school coaches down here. They just say Freeman is a genuine guy. They really like him. They think he's a future star. The way he deals with them, the way he dealt with them when he was at his previous job in Cincinnati, there's been a lot of positive feedback from the high school coaches here that say that he's just a great guy to deal with. He's straight up with you. He's honest. And that wins a lot of supporters. And, of course, when you have a brand and history like Notre Dame does and success, I mean, they've been to the playoffs, I think that's going to attract blue-chip players, and that's no different than in the state of Texas.
Wrapping up with Sam Kahn from The Athletic. All right, curveball, and it's just a yes-no question. Do you know what Young Sheldon is, the TV show?
I do not.
All right, it's the younger version of Sheldon from Big Bang Theory, if you know that show.
Okay, yeah, I do know that, yeah.
Well, young Sheldon grows up in Texas, just outside of Houston, and his dad's a football coach in high school, and he gets offered a job at Tulsa. And the second-grade daughter says, wait a minute, we live in Texas. We don't like Oklahoma. and I thought that was the funniest thing ever, that even a second-grade girl's going to know this. Is it easier for a high school stud in Texas to go to USC now than it was for him to go to OU with Lincoln Riley? Because Lincoln Riley has been making some inroads in the state as well.
Well, I think Lincoln's move to USC just created some buzz around that program that it really needed. You know, I mean, again, that's a program, a legacy program, a national contending program with a rich history. And that, I mean, the name, I think, kind of lost some luster over the last few years. I remember when I first started, if you got a USC offer, it was a huge deal. And, of course, that was in the height of the Pete Carroll era with Leinart and Reggie Bush. And that was kind of like the Alabama offer at the time. What the Alabama offer is now is what the USC offer was. And it definitely lost the luster, but Lincoln has built a strong reputation, as obviously with his success at Oklahoma. And he's gonna try to get guys out of here. There's no question about it. And they already had built in these last couple years, even though they hadn't been on top, they had built some really good inroads because that previous staff that Clay Helton had, that last staff he had, he had about a dozen guys that were from the state of Texas, assistant coaches. Most of those guys are gone now, but that those relationships and that familiarity has already been built in this footprint. So I think it's going to make it easier. At Oklahoma, they always did a good job of recruiting Texas. And honestly, if you're at OU, if you're at Oklahoma State, you have to recruit Texas. Just because your home state is good, there's good quality high school football, but it's not fertile enough, I don't think, to put yourself in a national championship winning position. You have to go into Texas. And obviously, Dallas is closer to Norman than it is to Houston in terms of drive time. So it was always North Texas has always been a big part of it, but I think Riley's going to do a great job. Like I said, not just recruiting nationally, but I think he'll continue to keep a hand in Texas even as he's at USC.
So we had an intern a couple years back, and he's like, TCU is supposed to be good. I was like, no, they've been good in your lifetime. I said they were good in the 30s, then they were good in the 80s with Jim Wacker, and like everybody else went on probation. I said, and then they weren't good anymore until Gary Patterson showed up and, you know, consistently good. I have a fear that window, that may have changed. TCU, what are they going to be in your estimation next 5 to 10 years?
I think once Texas and OU leave the conference, I think they do have the potential to be fighting with Baylor and with Oklahoma State and potentially Houston to be at the top of the conference. Because of the work that Patterson did, they were kind of like you were joking about Houston. They kind of got passed around initially post Southwest Conference. You know, they went to the WAC for a little while. They went to Conference USA.
Yeah, the governor didn't graduate from TCU.
Right. And that's right. And so, but Patterson, with the success that he built, they got him invested in donors emptying their pockets to build facilities. And I was talking to Sonny Dice. I was over there last week, and he said, you know, when people come visit, they're kind of shocked with how nice it is. But the stadium is really nice. They've done a really good job with their Eastside renovation. Their football facilities are in good shape. And they're in a really good recruiting footprint. They're in Fort Worth, right in the middle of DFW Metroplex. They're not far from East Texas. They're not far from Central Texas. They're even a drive enough away from West Texas if you want to go get some players out of there, which they have. They've gotten a couple of four-star players out of Amarillo. So I think the potential is there. I think that's why they made the move is – you know, everybody was shocked that they moved on from Gary Patterson, but they had 4 straight years of just kind of mediocre, like 500 football, which was not the Patterson standard. They were normally a double-digit win team under him. And I think that's why Jeremiah Donnelly, the AD, and the president made the move, was because they felt like with the realignment landscape and the way things are changing, we have got to turn this back to being a consistent winning program that contends with the Big 12. Otherwise, like you said, that window might close. So I think that's why they made the move to Dykes, and I'm curious to see if he can do for them what he did for SMU.
Folks, if you go to theathletic.com and, I don't know, give them like $50, $60 or something for an entire year, you can read Seth and you can read Grace Rayner and you read this guy, Sam Kahn. Appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you for having me. Take care.
All right, again, get him at The Athletic. It is Sam Kahn Jr., ESPN in the past, and now he – and Houston Chronicle, if you go way back – but The Athletic and doing a great job over there. The Athletic, is that – I'm trying to think. I have a membership. They don't have ads there, right? Isn't that part of the deal?
Yeah, it's part of the deal. They're owned by the New York Times now.
That's accurate. I saw that headline. So, so no ads and no pop-ups and no, you know, video. The worst thing is when you're trying to sneak in a little college football or sports or whatever at work, and all of a sudden the video starts playing, like that you got to scroll down like 4 times to find. It's not supposed to be playing a nationwide commercial loud in the office. You don't get that at The Athletic, so it's really great coverage. And you'll recognize a lot of the names, the folks that we had on, for instance, when we started the show before The Athletic had been, cracked a champagne bottle on that. Andy Bitter is there. Just so many of the folks that we've had on for years, and you can find them every single day at The Athletic. We're going to take a break. Continue with more of the Chuck Oliver Show next.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon background screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I think DJ has the goods. I think he's a talented guy. I think we just need to see what he can do, you know, a better job of what he can do more consistently. Watch him in a spring game. It was exciting to see, you know, that he has a chance. But I'll lean towards Clemson, but I'm nervous about the quarterback play.
Herbie. Kirk Herbstreit. Man, help me. I don't get nearly as much current events as I need. He's doing NFL games now, right?
That's correct. Amazon Prime with Al Michaels.
And is that a Thursday or Sunday or Monday night?
Thursday.
Okay, so he's still doing his college gigs on Saturday.
I would say that probably his week, and from what I understand, I didn't listen to the whole thing, but he does the deep dive on how his week is going to work. But I would have to believe early on in the week, he's preparing for Thursday, along with a little bit of college sprinkled in there, because he's still going to have the Saturday night game plus college game day. His plate will be full.
Yeah, there was plenty to do. He works one day a week. Well, here is Kirk's, and he's talking about Clemson and reservations, and I shouldn't have reservations based on the quarterback position at Clemson, not when it was DJU and the expectations and the little taste that we had seen, and then last year he winds up as the last rank, 14th. Out of 14, last-ranked starting quarterback in the ACC. Just absolutely out of nowhere. And so that shouldn't be my hesitation. But his typical week would have been, I'm doing whatever you want to do on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And that probably was watching a lot of film, sitting at home, watching film, doing ESPN hits from his house, doing whatever. And then usually on Wednesdays, you're going to have a conference call with the TV crew. We'll have a conference call with the coaches that they're the two teams. And then on, I don't know, Thursday, you go to the site. Friday, you want to be there for the walkthrough because that's when you get the really good stuff. And then Saturday, he does a game. Now, totally different.
Well, the check is nice. I don't think anybody's going to dispute that with them. But I think that the other thing that makes this work, Chuck, we live more in a digital world now because of what happened a couple of years ago, that I guarantee you it's not going to be as consequential for him to miss a quote-unquote production meeting. They can easily Skype him in,
yeah,
and he can do what he needs to do, yeah, remotely and be able to handle both jobs.
All right. Iowa has probably made a good choice. Oh, by the way, he's talking he was on podcast with
Gramlich and McLean, Kelly Gramlich and Eric McLean.
Iowa has made a quality choice. In fact, I'll take that back. Iowa's maybe made a perfect choice, and part of it is because of what they're not doing. Iowa started a tradition back, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years ago. And they started doing the wave between the first quarter and second quarter. And they also started having kid captains from the University of Iowa Children's Hospital come over and be part of the coin toss, et cetera, be a captain for a day. So when the wave started in 2017, all right, I'm not going to step out of delivering news and give you an opinion. The wave is silly. There are a lot of great college football and sports and stadium and fan traditions that I love. I'm not poo-pooing. Keg of nails, giant axe, whatever. Sing a song at halftime or like what Florida does. Isn't it the third and fourth quarter? Play Tom Petty, won't back down. Tremendous. Iowa, It was a work in progress. You chose the wave, but it's caught on. You get 70,000 every week, and it looks kind of cool. So it's like you're at a Detroit Tigers game in 84. But they do the wave. And they were trying to come up. They wanted to come up with one permanent song to play during the wave, like in a jump around at Camp Randall. And, you know, so stadiums have those. So they put it to a fan vote. And when I saw this, I was like, this is bad. Fans, we can't be trusted. Look at either all-star votes or... Was it the Ole Miss students or the Ole Miss fans that voted General Akbar to be the mascot? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
It's a trap. Yeah, that guy from Star Wars. I think it was the Ole Miss students. Tell me it was the students.
I think it was more of a gag campaign, but yes, it was led by the students.
He won.
And then miraculously, they went with a bear.
They did go with the black bears, but we shouldn't be trusted. We have Hall of Fame votes now. We shouldn't be trusted. Either Ty Law or Lawyer Malloy was in line to win Super Bowl MVP back about 20 years ago. It was the first year of the fan vote. The quarterback won that year, of course. Hey, let's vote for the quarterback. No, the defensive guy was way better today. Fan vote. We shouldn't be trusted. So what Iowa's going to do, they're going to let the kid captain choose his or her song each week to play. So I was take it away from the fans, give it to the one kid. Bravo, Iowa. What's up, Dan?
Oh, not much. You know, the funny thing is that I was talking about, and we were just talking about with Kirk Herbstreit, is the observation that I brought up a couple of months ago, and that was if there's one thing we know we're going to see out of the ACC this year, it's good quarterback play. And it's going to come from some players that necessarily – or some teams that we necessarily wouldn't expect. I understand a lot of people are looking at DJ Uiagalelei. And the question I think more of Clemson is going to be, is your offensive line really that great? Dabo Swinney seems to think that that offensive line is going to be good. But that still gives him a shot with a guy that's a former five-star, had a rough patch last season. If he can bounce back, it still puts them in a strong position. But then the question also goes to Pitt. Can you necessarily get Keaton Slovis to step up? Although it sounds like even, and this might be as well, because remember, Chuck, I've talked about it before, with transfer quarterbacks, there is always a scenario where I think the coach wants to really make them earn it, and that's why they start floating the scenario out there that, hey, this guy, he hasn't necessarily earned the job yet. Let's not just go ahead and pencil him in as the starter. But if you're looking for a good thing out of the ACC this year, it's going to be quarterbacks.
Got to agree with you on that. And if you go back to Trevor's final year, I thought that the ACC was going to have the best quarterback play in America, and that is how it turned out that season. So it could be a repeat.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com and then call us for a free in-home consultation.